WZEZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. It's the third day of the NBA season, and the coach of the Portland Trailblazers, Chauncey Billups, is under arrest. So is Miami Heat player Terry Rozier. There are more of 30 people arrested in a federal gambling sting involving unlawful betting and fixed poker games. This comes as legalized gambling has surged in popularity, but federal prosecutor Joseph Nocella said today,
the sports books themselves are victims in this case. They themselves did not, as far as our investigation has concluded, they did not perpetrate anything unlawful.
Billups and Rozier are on leave. President Trump said he is not sending federal troops to San Francisco this weekend after he spoke with the city's mayor. American ranchers say they aren't happy. The president's committed to buy more beef from Argentina. The White House says the president wants to increase supply to lower prices, and the Senate did not advance a bill that would have paid some federal workers during the shutdown. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, Hayward's home to the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly. A proposed bill making its way through the Wisconsin state legislature would give victims of sexual assault more time to pursue charges under the statute of limitations. If passed into law, the proposed legislation would double the statute of limitations for filing second-degree assault charges from 10 years to 20 years. It would also protect victims who report a sexual assault from being prosecuted for misdemeanor drug or alcohol charges and allow them to break their rental lease more easily if they provide their landlord with a criminal complaint or restraining order. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services has announced a notable increase in the number of children being screened for lead exposure this year. According to a press release, about 26% more children under the age of 6 have been screened for lead exposure compared to last year. DHS officials shared the data to honor National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week. They say screening more kids for lead exposure allows state and local health departments to catch more cases of lead poisoning before they lead to serious health impacts for the kids. A section of Highway 53 in Douglas County was completely shut down in both directions on Wednesday afternoon following a fatal head-on collision. According to law enforcement authorities, the crash occurred at around 2 p.m. on Wednesday near Berg Park Road and Kent Road in Amnicon Township. Their initial investigation found that one of the vehicles was driving northbound in the southbound lanes, causing the head-on collision. The identities of the two victims have not yet been released, and the circumstances of the crash remain under investigation. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration officials say the mild fall weather has left the waters of Lake Superior about 5 degrees warmer than average. According to a Northern News Now report, the average water temperature recorded on Lake Superior this year is about 53 degrees, higher than the usual mark of 48 degrees at this time of year. They also say 53 degrees is the second warmest that Lake Superior has ever been through this point in October. Experts warn that temperature shifts could impact things like algae blooms and fish habitats. For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly.
The Bucks lose Porter.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks won their opener last night, 133-120, against the Wizards at Fiserv Forum, but they lost guard Kevin Porter Jr., who went down at the end of the first quarter with a sprained left ankle after stepping on teammate Bobby Portis's foot. Doc Rivers asked if he saw what happened.
No, it didn't look good. I'll just say that, you know. So he's going to do an MRI tomorrow. We just got to hope for the best, but looking at it, it was a pretty bad sprain.
The NFL has named Micah Parsons NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Parsons will be after Steelers quarterback Aaron Rodgers next on Sunday Night Football. Rodgers asked if playing the Pack is a revenge game for him.
I don't have any animosity toward the organization. Obviously, I wish that, you know, things have been better in our last year there, but, you know, I have a great relationship with a lot of people still in that organization. This is not a revenge game for me. I'm just excited to see some of those guys and be on Sunday Night Football again.
That's Aaron Rodgers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
The Buzz of the North, 96.9, WBZH, Hayward's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, cold, and frosty tonight with lows in the mid-20s. For tomorrow, sunshine returns, highs upper 40s to around 50 degrees. Continued warming trend this weekend, highs climb through the 50s, maybe a slight rain chance. It's 42 right now.
Nobody had to tell your grandparents not to drive while using their typewriters.
Why should it be any different for us kids and our cell phones?
Distracted driving was the cause of more than 3,000 deaths in 2022. Come on, we're smarter than this. Let's put down the phones and focus on the roads. Drive safe, everybody.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Aho, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Across the state of Wisconsin, people have concerns, to say the least, about Badger football. Brady Ewing, two-time Big Ten champion and NFL vet, will be here to discuss it at our favorite fall event. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Thursday afternoon, Friday Eve. We've made it thus far. Hopefully we can struggle through the balance of the week together. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big headline today. It's been all over a lot of the national news stories. More than 30 people were indicted this morning in a case involving insider bets on basketball games, NBA basketball games, and poker games. The allegations are basically rigging, and these indictments involve four of the nation's five crime families. Cosa Nostra. It's a pretty sexy indictment. There are two specific cases. They're each separate, though there are defendants that appear in both indictments. And across these two cases, three current and former NBA players and coaches have been charged. Again, this is about defrauding gamblers and online betting firms. The first indictment accused six defendants, including Terry Rozier, a guard, current NBA player guard for the Miami Heat, and Damon Jones, a former player and coach, of trading on inside information available to players and coaches to allow a network of effectively conspirators, co-conspirators, to place winning bets on NBA games. And apparently some of this was happening in real time. One of the specific allegations is that in March of 23, Terry Rozier was starting for the Charlotte Hornets at that time. And he apparently told some of these alleged co-conspirators that he was planning to leave the game early, citing an injury. None of this was, of course, known to the public or Hornets officials. The bettors made hundreds of thousands of dollars of bets and then split the proceeds with Terry Rozier. That's icky. The second indictment, again, separate but somewhat related case, charged an incredibly well-known current NBA head coach, Chauncey Billups, who, by the way, used to play for the Bucks. Remember when Chauncey Billups used to play for the Bucks? He had that sort of weird-looking head, played with Big Dog Robinson. It's when they had those three guys that led the Bucks into the postseason a few times. Ended up being an NBA champion. He was the MVP of one of the finals. As well as Damon Jones, this is the second indictment, with participating in a series of rigged poker games that were organized by these mafia families that cheated unwitting victims out of $7 million. These poker games were across the country in like the Hamptons and Vegas and Miami and New York City. And the four of the five big Cosa Nostra families included the Bonanos, the Gambinos, the Lucchesis, and the Genovese families. And they would then take cuts of the profits from these rigged poker games. And it was the involvement of these NBA stars that helped lure these big dollar poker players into these games. It gets, I mean, pretty kind of Hollywood-esque. The indictments reference shuffling machines that had to be altered so that they were reading the cards in the deck and could predict which player at the table likely had the best hand, as well as get this, specially designed contact lenses and sunglasses to read through the cards. So the NBA has put Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups on immediate leave. Again, I listened to the press conference this morning because I love sports. I thought this was really interesting. Here were a couple of things. During the press conference, of course, like Cash Patel is out there like thumping his chest. But from the coverage that I've read today and this morning, it looks like the poker indictment was about $7 million. And one of the FBI agents this morning called these online betting companies one of the victims. I don't know about you all, but like, this is bad. Game fixing or attempts to game fix, cheating. I hate cheaters. This is terrible. But is it really like, I don't know, in context, like $7 mil? An online sports betting gambling firm is really a victim here? I don't know. We have the highest levels of incidence of gambling addiction, especially in young men, than our country has ever seen. We've legalized gambling, but only in particular places. Again, the cheating is a crime and it's bad. But yeah, I don't know. By the way, the NBA just inked broadcast deals worth $76 billion over the next 11 years. The online gambling market is estimated to be around total for 2024, like $79 billion. It's expected to reach $154 billion by 2030. And just from this first few months of 2025, combined revenue from casinos is $34 billion. I don't know. I'm just $7 billion. Like, no, the cheating's really bad, but... And the mob, bad. But it seems a little weird and disingenuous, and I have to ask a question about, like, why now? When the other big headline that I think has been kind of overwhelmed by this big press bonanza orchestrated by Lackey Cash Patel, FBI director, is the fact that Donald Trump yesterday pardoned a cryptocurrency fraudster billionaire. Okay? If you haven't heard about this, I'm here to tell you about it. This guy's name is Changpeng Zhao. He's the billionaire founder of the cryptocurrency exchange Binance. And to me, this guy engaged in massive fraud, like at scale, okay? He is now pardoned, doesn't have to pay any of the restitution, which I am certain well exceeded the $7 million involved in rich guys and online gambling companies getting bilked by these people who allegedly cheated. But that's the guy that Trump pardons? And by the way, oh, yes, the reason that he pardoned this guy or at least I would infer a reason that he pardoned him, or why maybe the name Binance might sound a smidgy familiar to you if you've been watching or listening to this program, is because Binance is the cryptocurrency that Donald Trump's new family grift machine called World Liberty Financial, which they started earlier this year, is doing this big deal in the United Arab Emirates. So yeah, it's a guy that Donald Trump has a business relationship with. So that dude gets a pardon, a billion-dollar crypto fraudster. Just a reminder who else Donald Trump has thought fit to pardon: Ross Ulbricht, who ran Silk Road, which was this crypto Bitcoin-backed fuel, that's what they traded in, that allowed human trafficking, drug trafficking. This guy was ordered to pay $200 million in penalties and was sentenced to life in prison, but he gets a pardon. Donald Trump is like the Oprah of pardons for billionaires. Hey, did you give to my inauguration campaign? Are you doing business with me? Are you willing to give to my big new vanity project East Wing ballroom that will dwarf the size of the existing White House footprint? Pardon for you, and a pardon for you, and a pardon for you. Also, a pardon from Donald Trump for Paul Walczak, the Florida nursing home CEO who stole $11 million from his employees' paychecks and pled guilty to that. But his mom wrote a check for $1 million so she could have dinner at Mar-a-Lago, and like, bingo bango, a week later, pardon for Mr. Walczak. How about Donald Trump's pardon of Salmon Melgen, the Florida ophthalmologist who is convicted of defrauding Medicare, you know, fraud, waste, and abuse, defrauding of Medicare out of, wait for it, ladies and gentlemen, $73 million. And he had his sentence commuted by Donald Trump. And this crypto fraudster that runs the Binance company that Donald Trump's World Liberty Financial is doing billion-dollar deals as bridge financing for this project in the UAE, he also pled guilty to his charges. You know who else is in on the deal with the UAE and Binance? Donald Trump's foreign negotiator, Stephen Witkoff. And all of this comes in the wake of Donald Trump, since his inauguration, basically dismantling the entire cryptocurrency fraud investigatory and regulatory enforcement mechanisms that were put in place under President Biden. Because, of course, there's no potential for abuse of regular American people with cryptocurrencies. So again, really interesting news today about the game fixing and the cheating at the poker with the rich people. And oh God, let's worry about those online betting companies. I don't know about you, but $7 million and online betting companies as, quote, victims aren't what keep me up at night, nor do rich guy poker players and fabulous big mansions in Vegas and Miami and New York City. Not what, cheating, terrible. Should there be some sort of criminal investigation, perhaps an indictment? Yeah, sure. But like the big, huge celebration of how amazing the FBI, no. When Donald Trump is busy effectively selling pardons out of the White House, makes me really angry, super disgusted. When we come back on the other side, the thing that I find so astounding about literally almost daily, yet another news report of Donald Trump's complete and utter 100% corruption, the grift that is the Trump presidency 2.0. Whenever Republicans get asked about it, they're like, "Oh, I haven't heard about that. I'm not sure. Let me get back to you. Ooh, awkward. Let me dodge the question." Like, why do we know more about Donald Trump's corruption than the leaders of the MAGA party in the halls of Congress? I've got some sound about their incompetence, about his corruption next. So don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, where we point out the baloney every single day. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on The Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the Recombobulation Area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is, and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Donald Crump, I'm going to just start calling him Crump the Corrupt. Donald Trump's daily corruption and the news, the constant news cycle about this, is pretty outstanding in its scope and its breadth. You've got the watches he's hawking. Melania is hawking stuff. They got the meme coins they're hawking. They got the kids doing the deals in the Mideast. They got the Trump World Liberty Financial doing deals in the Mideast. Kushner's going to be the developer in Gaza. And I will get to that today. It all stinks. There's the arguable, basically, like, selling of pardons. It's gross. You would think, as he guts oversight agency after oversight agency, as he fires inspector general after inspector general, as he installs lackey after incompetent lackey into various appointed positions that are supposed to be independent from the White House, that are responsible for oversight, like the self-proclaimed, I've got a Nazi street guy that's thankfully not going to be the head of the Office of Special Counsel, you would think that the last bastion of constitutional oversight of a visibly, objectively, daily corrupt president, you know, Congress, that congresspersons might be a little interested in this corruption, that they might want to, you know, keep themselves abreast of the day's news. But sadly, if they are on the MAGA side of the fence, it seems that the constant refrain is, I know nothing, not a thing. I know nothing about this. Listen, this is Mike Johnson yesterday, and it's important that you note that this was Mike Johnson yesterday being asked about Donald Trump deciding if he himself is going to pay himself $230 million, a quarter of $1 billion, for his bogus complaints about the very legitimate investigations into his very criminal conduct during his first administration. Listen to Mike Johnson, knowing nothing about it, yesterday.
How comfortable are you with the president apparently seeking $230 million from the Department of Justice?
I don't know the details about that. I've just read it. I didn't talk with him about that. I know that he believes he's...
I don't know anything about that. When asked a question about the president's unethical, corrupt self-dealing, and you don't know anything about it yesterday, you would think that by today, Mike Johnson would know something about it. But alas, you would be wrong.
You said yesterday you were still trying to get the details of this $230 million the president has asked for the Justice Department to pay for his legal bills. Now that you've had some time left to get the details, are you okay with taxpayers potentially being on the hook for that kind of money?
I'm not trying to dodge the question. I haven't had time to get the details, okay? That's still on my list, things to do list. Yesterday was almost literally a 21-hour workday.
Where? Is this guy for real? Yes, of course you're dodging the question, you spineless puppet. And then, of course, Carolyn Leavitt. She's become kind of like the weirdly blinking, stares-off, thousand-yard stare Cupid doll of the Trump administration. She always goes to the mat. Now, we're putting two sounds together here, folks. This is Leavitt with indignance. How dare you? And then listen to Trump admit that, yeah, he's probably going to be paying himself. Listen to these two things together.
I think it's frankly ridiculous that anyone in this room would even suggest that President Trump is doing anything for his own benefit.
With the country, it's interesting because I'm the one that makes the decision, right? And, you know, that decision would have to go across my desk. And it's awfully strange to make a decision where I'm paying myself. In other words, did you ever have one of those cases where you have to decide how much you're paying yourself in damages?
Caroline, do you actually listen to what the president says? Does Mike Johnson, or is anyone paying attention? The lights are on, but no one's home. So senators Cornyn and Cassidy were also asked about it. This makes for some interesting sound. At least one of them admits, like, the optics are bad. But again, it's a confederacy of dunces. I know nothing. I know that. I probably should look at that. Listen to this nonsense.
Well, it seems odd. And I think he's in the difficult position where he's asking for something that he would approve. I think it's terrible optics.
Do you have any issues with the $230 million ask that Trump had to the Justice Department for his legal bills?
I want to find out more about it because I don't know what the details are.
The president had asked the Justice Department to pay for his legal bills with taxpayer money, $230 million. Are you okay with that?
You're telling me this right now, Manu. Can I kind of track it down? Before I comment, let me read that on my own.
I don't mean to dodge the question, but maybe some bad opt. Oh gosh, how dare you suggest that the president would do anything for his own benefit in this last 30 seconds that Caroline Leavitt was on Fox News. You cannot make this stuff up. Again, for the MAGAs in Congress, the lights are on, but ain't nobody home. Nobody is interested in doing a whit of their constitutional duty to exercise oversight over the executive branch. Shame on them. If this isn't the thing that you can find your way to, maybe a trail of breadcrumbs to understand that this is absolutely an abomination. It is self-dealing. It is unethical. Anywhere in the world for anybody that's going to tell the truth about it, except for these guys. Yeah. When we come back, I'm joined by Tom Moore, senior fellow for democracy policy at the Center for American Progress, because when we talk about corruption, it ultimately is about getting the money, the dark money, out of politics. Mr. Moore's got a solution that does not require a constitutional amendment. We talk about how to make it better on the other side. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, Hayward's home for The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly. A state Senate committee held a public hearing on a proposed bill that would require public schools to establish cardiac emergency response plans this week. The legislation was considered in the Wisconsin Senate Public Safety Committee on Wednesday. If passed into law, it would require schools to lay out a team of staff members who would respond to a cardiac emergency and a process for activating that team, as well as sharing that plan with local emergency service providers. School athletic events would also be required to have AEDs on hand. Wisconsin Department of Health Services officials say there's been a significant drop in the number of residents who have already received their flu shot this year. According to DHS data, only about 309,000 Wisconsinites have gotten their flu shot so far in the month of October. Last October, that number was nearly 860,000. DHS officials are encouraging residents to get their flu shot as soon as possible, as winter weather begins to move into the state and respiratory viruses start to become more common again. Officials from the Indian Head Community Action Agency's Rusk County Food Pantry say they're still looking for a new location following the closure of their Ladysmith facility last month. The organization's board of directors met on Tuesday, saying their goal is to remain in the Ladysmith area in a low or no rent building. They also say they've applied for tax-exempt status for new grant funding, but may not hear back for a while due to the federal government shutdown. Feed My People Food Bank is hosting pop-up pantries to fill the growing demand for food services. The Senior Resource Center of Sawyer County is inviting area residents to contribute to a fundraising drive for its Meals on Wheels program. Organization officials say they're facing cuts like many other nonprofits in the region, but the need for the meals program is increasing. The Meals on Wheels program provides area seniors who can't get out of the house as often as they used to with nutritious meals, as well as a wellness check and some social interaction. Senior Resource Center officials are recommending donations of about $7 per meal. For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. In Filthy Rich People Who Can't Catch a Break news, Jennifer Lopez cannot seem to live without drama if she's been out of the spotlight for more than a month. The actress-singer appeared on The Howard Stern Show recently and said in all of her four marriages, she was given rings and material possessions and houses, but that none of her four husbands truly loved her because they weren't capable. That did not sit well with her first husband, Ohani Noah, who accused her of not only rewriting history, but of cheating on him multiple times during their just 11-month marriage. A former model and personal trainer, Noah says despite her cheating, she begged him to stay to avoid bad publicity in her career, but she still kept lying and cheating. That doesn't sound like our Jen Jen. Noah claims he moved out of the state for her, supported her financially and emotionally until he was no longer needed. I mean, in J-Lo's defense, she did become famous very quickly. How was she supposed to know she'd only need him for 11 months? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, Hayward's home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, cold, and frosty tonight with lows in the mid-20s. For tomorrow, sunshine returns, highs upper 40s to around 50 degrees. Continued warming trend this weekend, highs climb through the 50s, maybe a slight rain chance. It's 42 right now.
Matt Nair on air.
He is the executive director of Back 40 Action. Will Westmoreland is here. So, Will, we can't sell our soybeans. There's no market for that. But Brooke Rollins, Secretary of Agriculture, says it's all great. What are you hearing from fellow farmers?
Well, Jane, we are the world's leader in one department of agriculture now that Donald Trump is president and Brooke Rollins is Secretary of Agriculture, and that's word salad.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone.
If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, Mike Clemens gets us set for the Packers heading to Pittsburgh to play Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. And Kristen Lierley joins the show from Pittsburgh as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back. If you're rejoining me, my name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. For the next half hour, I'm going to be joined by the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. His name is Tom Moore, and he has written, and there is now publicized in USA Today and other news outlets, a brilliant solution to the dark money and its corrupting influence in politics. When you look at any any poll, I don't care if it's being done by the American Enterprise Institution or the Brennan Center for Justice, right or left of the spectrum, when the polling question is asked of Americans, are corporations people? Is money speech? Should we have this unlimited amount of dark money pouring into politics? The answer is resoundingly, at 80%+, no. Americans know that this is rot. It is the worst kind of rot. It is the rot that makes government unaccountable to regular people, because if money is speech, then you and I are just whispering. So it is with excitement and humility and a dash of embarrassment that I never thought of this beautifully simple solution that I am joined by Tom Moore from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Thanks so much for being here, Tom.
Oh, Maggie, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's just dive right in. Everybody, if you pay attention to politics a little bit, knows about the Citizens United decision back from 2010 that basically said money is speech. You can't really regulate it. It gutted, I'm speaking sort of in broad strokes, but it gutted the McCain-Feingold bipartisan legislation back from, geez, the 90s? Is that when that was? My goodness. From the 90s, that tried to have at least some guardrails and disclosure obligations about money in politics. And I have made the argument that the slow roll into Citizens United actually started about 45 years before, like in the 70s, there were some decisions where the Supreme Court was indicating that they viewed money as basically equivalent to speech. And a lot of the commentary has talked about trying to mobilize people and trying to pressure elected officials to consider a constitutional amendment to specify this, to overcome this disastrous, I think probably going to go down in the annals of history, of one of the worst Supreme Court decisions of all time. But you, my friend, have had a searing insight that is based on the fact that corporations and the registration of corporations are governed state to state by state law. A corporation only exists in a state because a state issues its registration or says, yes, you are a duly organized corporation of thus and such state. So I'm going to pass it over to you because you deserve full credit for this brilliant insight. Tell us what the insight is, Tom.
Well, thank you, Maggie. So what it boils down to, like, everybody's been talking about corporate rights, corporate speech rights. That's what courts have been talking about in all these cases, you know, certainly for the last 40 years, and Citizens United is the most prominent on those. But nobody's been talking about corporate powers. And that's the key to this, where if we think of just corporations as just like these entities that can employ all these people and have factories and operate around the world and operate in every state. And just they just kind of seem to exist, and we don't know where they came from. We don't know, you know, we don't know a lot about them. But there's a very specific place that they came from, and there's a very specific way that they're created. And they're created by state law. The first thing you learn when you go to law school, the first day of corporations classes, corporations are creatures of state law. They don't exist outside the state law. If you cut off that part of the statute and threw it away, there would be no corporations, you know, unlike people who existed before the laws were written and will exist after the laws have gone away. States give corporations every single one of their powers. And for the whole modern era, for the last 100 years or so, all states have given all corporations basically all the powers of natural people. So people are born with their powers. We all have this many powers when we're born. We don't give powers to the government. We don't get powers from the government. We give them to the government in a democracy. That's where the government gets its legitimacy. But corporations start from zero. And for the last 100 years, all the states have just sent and given all the corporations all the powers of people. So they have looked like people in some ways from a power perspective and a rights perspective for the last 100 years. And when all these states said, like, all right, you have the power to do anything legal, you have the power of a person. When the court in Citizens United got to that, they said, well, people have the power to spend in politics, and spending in politics is legal. So you corporations must have the power to do that, and you must have the right to do that. And they didn't talk about the power because this has just been assumed for the last 100 years.
Yes.
But what's fascinating is I worked on some other projects at the Center for American Progress, thinking about corporate power and thinking about the power of boards and how did Citizens United affect all that and all that. And it really got me thinking about where does this power come from? And you go back to state statutes. And it turns out in every state statute, there's a provision, and they're almost all the same, that says, hey, by the way, we give you all of your powers. And critically, we can change them up at any time or get rid of them altogether. And what courts have said, these have been in state laws since the 1820s, and every new state has added them to the laws almost immediately. And what the Supreme Court has said for 200 years is, oh, because that clause is in there, states can change the powers that they give their corporations anytime for any reason, good or bad, doesn't matter who it hurts. They have, and this is a word you don't hear very often in campaign finance law, they have plenary power to do this, unlimited power to do this, unchallenged power to change the powers that they give their corporations. So that's it. And so basically that is the nut of this, which is just, it's like, okay, we've been giving you this many powers for 100 years. Now we're just going to give you this many powers. And it's this affirmative grant of powers that the state has been giving for the last 100 years. And just like, oh, we're just going to give you less. And what we're not going to give you is the power to spend in politics. So the power to spend in elections, the power to spend in ballot issues. There's another provision in state law that kind of makes this work. This is moving ahead in Montana right now. And that's called the Montana Plan. You can get the details at montanaplan.com. And if Montana passes this, then no Montana chartered corporation can spend on any politics anywhere in the galaxy. You know, they're out. They're out of politics altogether. But this provision in Montana's law and almost every other state's law, and everybody else can add it, it says no out-of-state corporation can exercise any power in this state that a domestic corporation can't exercise.
That's the hook.
That is the hook. That is the key to the whole thing.
And I just want to sit here with people so that they understand why that's incredibly important. Because but for a provision of state law that says a, quote, foreign corporation, meaning a business that is incorporated in any other state, if you do not have a provision, one, you strip the corporation of the political power if they're incorporated, and I'm just going to say Wisconsin right now for this to make this easy. If you are a Wisconsin incorporated business, you cannot engage in political spending of any type. But that only works if the law says no business incorporated in any other state can in this state exercise any powers that a business incorporated in Wisconsin cannot. Otherwise, all a business has to do is hope that there is one holdout state that doesn't engage in this prohibition or this, I'm going to call it, refusal to grant the powers that inure to human beings as an inalienable right in this constitutional democracy to a freaking entity that is profit maximizing and not democracy promoting. All they would have to do is then simply incorporate in that holdout state and still retain those powers. So that provision is what makes it work.
Right. And so basically what it means is that, you know, 49 states worth of out-of-state corporations to Wisconsin cannot spend in Wisconsin politics either, because the domestic guys can't do so. And it's weirdly powerful. And this is one of the few ways that it actually works in this direction. But part of this is that none of these corporations spend in Wisconsin's local, state, or federal elections. And ordinarily, you cannot make a state law change that affects anything at the federal level, because there's federal supremacy and, you know, the Congress has occupied the field in all these different areas. And there's all, a lot of law in this. But because this corporations get all of their powers from the state, they get the power to spend in local elections from the state. They get the power to spend in state elections from the state. They get the power to spend in federal elections from the state. And so it's not a restriction that's somewhere in state law that's keeping them from spending in federal elections. It's just not giving them this power. And it is this area of law, it is totally separate from Buckley v. Valeo and Citizens United and all these other cases that where the court has just been shredding campaign finance law for the last 40, 50 years. This is absolutely foundational corporation law. This is what all of the rest of corporate law rests on, that corporations get their powers from the states. They can only exercise the powers that they're given, you know, all of that kind of thing. And that it's a matter of state law and not federal law.
It's fascinating in addition, and for anybody that's sort of a legal wonk, what I additionally like about this, Tom, is that efforts of corporations to try to take cases out of the state court system, if the courts show any fidelity to their 100 plus years of precedent saying corporate powers and how they are granted are exclusively in the jurisdiction of the state, there would be no basis, at least I would say, to try to remove those cases into federal court. I'm sure they would use a First Amendment hook to try to get there. But I think that would be on fairly weak territory, because you would be interpreting states and their grants of powers to corporations, which, again, long, long, long history of saying corporations exist on a state-by-state basis and their powers are specified by those states.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Where does this stand in terms of, like, legal academia? Are law professors writing law review articles about this? Is this new-ish? There's the Montana plan, so it's been around for a little while.
Just a couple months. And it's something that the Center for American Progress has worked with the Montana organizers there to get that going. But on the ground in Montana, it is a nonpartisan effort. You know, they are getting folks from both sides of the aisle and ginning up a huge amount of interest all throughout the state in this. It has been submitted to the Secretary of State. It's gone to the Attorney General, and we expect a decision tomorrow from the Montana Attorney General. Yeah, about whether it meets some certain. Basically, they've got a couple technical things that it kind of the form that it has to take in order to qualify for the ballot. We kind of expect him to turn it down.
Yes,
he's a fairly conservative Republican. He turns a lot of ballot issues down. He also gets flipped a lot by the Montana Supreme Court. If he does turn it down tomorrow, or if he delays some more and it's a little bit later, whenever he does, the Transparent Election Initiative, the group that has sponsored the Montana plan in Montana, has 10 days to get a brief to the Montana Supreme Court appealing that decision. And then it'll be a very quick turnaround that the Attorney General has to give their response. Then the Montana Supreme Court will decide whether that is eligible to be on the ballot the next year.
You're going to let me know what he says tomorrow, Tom, because I want to report on it. We're going to talk about how to maybe get this going in Wisconsin and other states. We'll take another crack at explaining it, because this is a little technical, and it's if you're not a corporate type person, this may be all new information to you, but it is incredibly important to every American to rip out, root and stem the rot that is dark money in politics. We have a pathway forward. Folks, don't go anywhere. I continue this important discussion with Tom Moore, Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The North Carolina legislature passed a new gerrymandered congressional map October 22nd, likely adding a GOP congressional seat to offset expected 2026 midterm losses in the U.S. House. Legislators diluted black voting power to do it, but say it was for partisan reasons. The map likely gives Republicans an 11-3 advantage in a purple state where President Trump won by only 3.3% in 2024. State leaders went out of their way to say it was manipulated to help maintain GOP control of the U.S. House. State Senator Ralph Hise said, "The motivation behind this redraw is simple and singular. Draw a new map that will bring an additional Republican seat to the congressional delegation." Why admit the cheating? The U.S. Supreme Court's Rucho decision said gerrymandering for partisan reasons was a state political matter, not a matter for the federal courts. For the moment, racial gerrymandering is still illegal under the Voting Rights Act, so the deliberate admission of partisan gerrymandering helps to create an alibi when the case reaches federal court. The new map changed only Congressional District 1, a currently competitive Northeast district where black Congressman Don Davis won by 2%. A North Carolina Black Alliance analysis shows it shifted 8% of black voters into adjoining redder districts, diluting black voting power and tilting District 1 Republican. We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Join me, Tom Hartman, each and every weekday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Tom Hartman Program right here on Civic Media. I talk about the issues that all Wisconsinites can get behind, from unrigging our economy so it works for all of us, not just the billionaire class, to improving our representative government, to delivering on the promise of we the people. Tune in middays right here on your local Civic Media station from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Tom Hartman Program. Tag, you're it.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Joining me this half hour is Tom Moore, Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress, who had, I would describe it as, one of those aha moments about how we can work on a state-by-state basis to get money out of politics. Things that all of us, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, generally agree is a terrible, no good, very bad thing. And so, Tom, let's reset it for folks, because most regular people don't swim in the world of corporations. Sure. and how a business gets incorporated and how you go about doing that. So let's just start from the beginning and give it to folks pretty simply.
Yeah. Again, it's a matter of powers and rights. And the thing that we just haven't talked about for the last 100 years is that corporations get every single one of their powers from the states. And states can decide which powers to give the corporations. They just haven't for the last 100 years. And once they get all the powers, or they get all the powers of a person, they kind of look like a person under the law. And then they have all the rights of a person under the law. But those two things are really different. And it's worth, and it took me months actually to really get my head around and kind of put a wall between those two. And here's one way to think about it. And I'll ask you, Maggie, do you have the power to fly? And I mean flap your arms and fly.
I most certainly do not, my friend. No. I wish I did sometimes.
Yes, but you do not. Your creator did not endow you with that power. Birds, bats, pterodactyls, their creator did give them the power to do that. Now, Maggie, if the Supreme Court came to you and said, Maggie, you have a constitutional right to fly, would you go up on the roof and give it a shot?
No.
Highest court in the land, you know, you sure?
Still not doing it.
Still not doing it, because regardless of what they say about your right to do something, if you are an entity that doesn't have the power to do it, talking about the rights doesn't change that underlying reality that you don't have the power to do it. And it's the same thing with corporations. If a corporation is defined as an entity, you know, if Wisconsin changes its laws so that that is just no longer on its list of powers and it's redefined as something that can't do it, it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court says about its right to do it. You have the right to do it or you don't have the right to do it. It doesn't matter, because they still can do it. They're defined as something that can't do it. And that's the difference between powers and rights.
So sometimes we need those metaphors to get our heads around these things. And I think that makes it so very clear. So, Tom, we've got the Montana plan where this is moving forward. Their attorney general is reviewing whether or not effectively this question about should corporations that are incorporated in the state of Montana have this power to spend in elections. The AG is reviewing whether or not that is in appropriate form. It's a technical, right, really, inquiry to go to a ballot. He'll probably say no. We'll keep folks posted on that. If you want to find out more about that, you can go to MontanaPlan.com. Also, you can check out the Transparent Election Initiative. Here in Wisconsin, voters, we cannot basically petition or demand and have something like this put up on a binding statewide referendum. It has to matriculate through our legislature to get on the ballot. So, Tom, as we sit here today and people are starting to get their heads around the fact that the Supreme Court might tell corporations that they have the right to fly, but try as they might, if they jump off the roof of a building, they ain't flying. And so, too, when it comes to political spending, if each state in turn decides to remove the power from corporations, which are entirely created by effectively the grant of powers to them by each state. If each state starts to say corporations don't have this power, it doesn't matter if the Supreme Court says, but yes, they have the right to do it. What should voters in the state of Wisconsin be asking their elected officials about to get this ball rolling here?
Yeah. Well, I think first it's an education moment where, you know, for the last 15 years, every American, you thought that the only way to get rid of Citizens United was through a federal constitutional amendment or a new Supreme Court. And then we were just going to have to like slog it out with a constitutional amendment or wait maybe several lifetimes for a Supreme Court that would flip it. And so what Wisconsin residents can do is they can tell their legislators like, oh, you actually have the tools in your hands. This is one of my favorite footnotes on this is a quote from the Wizard of Oz, where the good witch tells Dora that she had the power to do this the whole time. This was for me, this was Operation Ruby Slippers for a while. State legislators have had this power for the last 200 years to change up the powers that they give their corporations, and they can undo Citizens United, make it irrelevant state by state by state. And if majority of the Wisconsin House and Senate make that decision and make that move, they can fix Citizens United for every level of politics in Wisconsin.
It's so critical. We've had this power all along. Corporate law and how we view corporations has just kind of become part of the ephemera in this country. We just presume that they have these kinds of powers when in fact the powers only exist because a state grants a business that power. And a state, by virtue of its citizens and a binding referendum, could say or say permanently, you're never getting that power here, and no corporation incorporated in any other state can exercise a power in the state of Wisconsin that a domestic, meaning Wisconsin-based corporation, can't exercise.
That's right.
Folks, ask your elected officials. Every time you talk to them, do you know what the Montana plan is? Do you know that we can tell corporations that are established here in the state of Wisconsin that they do not have the right to spend in elections? And do you know, state legislator, that that is entirely within your power? This is where we're going to start. This is where we're going to finish. It can be done. It will be done. Why? Because it's good for every single American. Big thanks to Tom Moore. Keep us posted. You'll come back and talk to us more about this because I love it. Sometimes these elegant, simple solutions to the complicated problems that are our pathway forward. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Professor John Hall about the politicization of our military. Irrefutably, what's going on now, and why we all need to be deeply concerned about it, regardless of which party you may care for more.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Photos show that the east wing of the White House has been completely demolished as part of President Trump's plan to build a new ballroom. The White House says the president and private donors are paying for that $300 million project. Responding to more questions about it, Press Secretary Caroline Levitt said,
"The president has been incredibly transparent. I would reject any notion otherwise when it comes to this ballroom project. It's something he personally has obviously taken an interest into."
President Trump said he is not sending federal troops to San Francisco this weekend after speaking with the city's mayor. Plaintiffs suing the federal government over ICE agents in Chicago allege that Customs and Border Protection agents used chemical agents, violating a temporary restraining order that blocks their use without justification. There's been no comment from the government. And the NBA says Portland Trailblazers coach Chauncey Billups and Miami Heat player Terry Rozier are on leave. They were arrested as part of an illegal gambling sting today. This is ABC News.